TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at tntradio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox, lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio, coming at you live on the week of December 3rd, 2022. And wow, we have a packed show here today. A lot has happened this week in both the climate world, in both the agricultural world, the world of Hollywood, and also the free speech world, the corporate government collusion world. We had the big document leak by Elon Musk at Twitter last night, saying what we all suspected. This has been the Twitter revelations are coming out are very similar to what we saw happen a few months back with different Freedom of Information Act requests, showing direct collusion between the Biden campaign, the Democrats in Washington, and Twitter to literally suppress stories and accounts that had any criticism of Joe Biden. And it's an incredible document dump. People are still pouring through it, analyzing it, but it's essentially showing that Democrats on Capitol Hill, Biden campaign officials, literally were going out of their way. And there's even warnings by Twitter, internal documents by Twitter, explaining to other Twitter employees and directors that we have to do this because of the risks involved, i.e. 2016, meaning whatever it takes to defeat Donald Trump, we can't let him be elected. This is incredible. Remember, in my book, The Great Reset, the whole premise of my two chapters, essentially, on big tech and censorship and the Chinese social credit system, is that big tech censorship is government censorship. In many of the same ways I've told you that, you know, when they talk about the United States can't drill for our own oil, we'll beg Venezuela, we'll beg OPEC. In the same way, we're not allowed to drill for rare earth mining. I've been to the Molycorp mine, out in the Mojave Desert. We interviewed Bantu Rare Earth, my colleague Scott Wheeler and I, back in the 90s. And China was laughing at us. We don't have the same restrictions that you guys do. Well, we outsource our energy extraction so we can look like we don't do that here. And the same thing is the government outsources its censorship to big tech so they can say, oh, we're not violating the First Amendment. We wouldn't do that. We're a democracy. This is an incredible story. Forget about, I mean, you hear Hunter Biden's laptop, Hunter Biden's, like people just tune their ears out because they've heard it so many times. It's about big tech government colluding. And now we have the goods, we have the dotted I's, we have the cross T's from this Elon Musk Twitter document dump. Incredible story. And by the way, Elon Musk has disappointed me. Got to be honest on this. I mean, yeah, he's on team free speech generally, and we should cheer him on, and he's going to make a lot of good. But there was a video actually by Jimmy Dore, my new favorite political analyst. He's their former, the very progressive left, believes Medicare for all and is against capitalism, etc. However, we align on free speech. We align on a big tech censorship and a whole host of other issues. It's shocking how much conservative libertarians, people who believe in free, can now align themselves with the Vandava Shivas, with the Russell Brands of the world. But on this whole free speech, Elon Musk, Twitter thing, there was a man named Michael Tracy, and I was pointed this out while watching the Jimmy Dore show on YouTube. And this is an incredible story. And just bear with me as I read this to you because it shocked me. I just was not aware of this. Twitter policy for the whole company in 2015. Now remember, pre-Donald Trump, we lived in a different world. I'm not blaming Donald Trump. I'm saying the media's reaction to him was we can never allow another Donald Trump to happen. This will not happen. This cannot happen. And we will do everything in our power to make sure it doesn't happen. Well, here's some of the stuff that was in their power. Twitter policy in 2015 before media activists lobby for the company to become a giant online daycare center. No direct threats of violence. Let me repeat that. No direct threats of violence for if you're a Twitter user. Beyond that, Twitter doesn't mediate disputes between users or remove offensive content. If you feel the law was broken, contact police. Shocking. Unbelievable. This was their actual abusive policy behavior. Let's read it again. No direct threats of violence. Beyond that, Twitter doesn't mediate disputes between users, remove offensive content. And if you feel the law was broken, contact police. And it goes into much greater detail, talking about contact the police of jurisdiction, that they're not going to get involved. In other words, it was a free speech hellscape that Elon Musk didn't like. But anyway, he goes on. He goes, this is Michael Tracy, the analyst. It's not like Twitter was run by a bunch of conservative Republicans back in 2015. It was still generically liberal. It was very liberal. It was Silicon Valley run. But this was pre-2016 election when everything went haywire. Today, the generic liberal policies would get castigated as far right or extremist. That's what they would call Twitter if they used that back in 2015. And here's the incredible thing. Might be clever for Elon Musk to just copy and paste the old 2015 Twitter policy. And then when the cries of fascist inevitably rain down on Elon Musk, simply ask if Twitter was institutionally fascist in 2015. Now see, what I've been reading about Elon Musk is he's coming in, he's making the staff stay overnight, he's sleeping in the office, he's stressed out, he's trying to do the best job he can. Bull bleep, okay? That's not how you get anything done. Your judgment's going to be clouded. Your sleep cycle's off. You're putting all this pressure on yourself. I don't know what Elon Musk's process is. And obviously, he's a very successful man with government contracts. But that's another story and connections and riding the climate change wave and everything else. But anyway, Elon Musk should have simplified his life. He should have said, we are going back to this 2015 policy. Here it is. Everyone else can go F themselves. And by the way, get a good night's sleep. I'm going to let all Twitter employees have half a day today because I've just made this consequential, simple, elegant, and profoundly deep decision. We're done. We've just solved the problem of free speech. And here's the kicker. Alex Jones would have an account and Kanye West or whatever he goes by. What I lost... You lost your plate on Elon Musk was when he talked about Alex Jones. Now, I'm not defending Alex Jones or anything to do with Sandy Hook or anything like that. But someone asked him, are you going to put Alex Jones back on? This is during those weeks when he was camping out at the office, all stressed out, trying to figure out the free speech policy. He said, no, because a child of mine died in my arms, and therefore I can't allow anyone on my platform who profits off the death of children, referring to Alex Jones and Sandy Hook. Well, first of all, I think it was his ex-wife that came out and said the child actually died in her arms, not Elon Musk's arms. But secondly, that's not a policy. I'm sorry. So the billionaire quirky founder had a personal issue, so therefore you're banned for life. There's no like, huh? That's free speech policy? That's our hero? Just whim, just some kind of a whim? Like, oh, well, because this happened in my life, I don't like this guy. So he's banned. That's my decision. Yeah, screw you if you don't like it. I'm sorry. This is what everyone's getting all excited about, Elon Musk. And then, of course, I haven't followed it closely, but the Kanye West thing, he went bonkers on again Alex Jones. I don't understand. I think he's just saying everything to be shocking, mental illness, who knows. I don't know. I never followed Kanye West. When Tucker Carlson had his 2-hour interview, I think I said, oh, Tucker's interviewing Kanye tonight, great, I don't have to watch any of the show, and turned it off immediately. Not that I hate Kanye West, I just have not onto that phenomenon. I was fascinated when Trump was president and Kanye visited the White House. I was interested in a lot of that stuff, followed him that way, but at any rate. They pulled off, or I don't think they permanently banned him, but I guess he had a Star of David and a swastika. Maybe you could call that, it's offensive. I don't know the policy on that, but I'm just saying they need to have a simplified, evenly applied rule at Twitter, not Elon Musk, you know, coming up with bizarre personal reasons that are actually disputed. I mean, it was just absolute nonsense. What's interesting about this Michael Tracy bringing up this 2015 Twitter policy is Elon Musk actually said Twitter policy, and Elon Musk replied, and this, again, it's just November 29th. This is like 4 days ago. This makes sense. So it's possible that Elon Musk didn't even know about this Twitter policy or hadn't thought of it until he saw this and responded publicly on Twitter. To just go back to that, again, this is the simplest way out of this whole fiasco of Elon Musk trying to reinvent the wheel. This is the literally what he should do, is just go back to the 2015 policy and tell everyone else to stuff it. And of course, I think it was CBS. Oh, no, it was the New York Times. Big article about all the hate speech increasing since Elon Musk took over on Twitter. Like, we're all supposed to hide under our desks at home because there's more hate speech on Twitter. I can't believe it. Elon Musk must be stopped. We need investigations. We need to just take this man down. There's hate speech. Anyway. So that's the big story coming out of the blocks. This, and I'll probably have more on that. I'd like to have a guest on this topic because it's important, a very important topic. Big tech censorship is government censorship, and that is where we are in that. So the other big story, and this is what I was going to open with until this happened last night. This is a huge story. Apple CEO Tim Cook is actively, through this AirDrop function of Apple iPhones, enabling, abetting, supporting, and completely in on the Communist Chinese Party, CCP, Chinese Communist Party in Russia, in China, of suppressing the protests going on, springing up all over the country, protesting the lockdowns, the working conditions, the political freedom. He is not allowing, there's one country in the entire world, according to reports, that the Apple iDrop phone function, where you drop information to and from phones without tracking, without going on a network. It's like, you know, based on your proximity to a person. And that country that does not work, that Apple, the only country Apple's banned it in is China. Now, why would that be? Is it just an anomaly? Is there something that, you know, what's happening here? Well, Apple CEO Tim Cook, this is a little history, back in 2017, claimed China aligns completely with Apple's values on climate. The Apple CEO, who's still the CEO now, Tim Cook, defended the Chinese Communist Party as very fixated on doing the right things to avert climate change. Now, hold on. We're not finished. He added, China has done an unbelievable job of lifting people out of poverty. They're doing an incredible job and far beyond what any country has done. We're talking about mid-90s to today, the biggest change in the number of people who pulled out of poverty. We should all applaud that, applaud China. We should all feel good about it. So there you are. And the environmental leadership today, it is very clear and it aligns completely with Apple's values. And then the questioner goes, the Chinese environment. So I have this clip. Let's play. This is Apple CEO Tim Cook, 2017. This will set the groundwork for why Apple is so supportive of China. Let's play clip number one of Tim Cook.
China's done an unbelievable job of lifting people out of poverty. They've done an incredible job, I mean, far beyond what any country has done. We were talking about mid-90s to today. The biggest change is the number of people that have been pulled out of poverty. By far, and we should all applaud that, and we should all feel good about it. And so there are, in the environmental leadership today is very clear, and it aligns completely with Apple's values.
The Chinese environmental leadership,
yes,
the government.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very fixated on doing the right things to avert climate change. And this is something that means a lot to us as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. And so what we always try to do is find the areas where you can work together, find the areas of commonality, and then the things that you disagree with, take time to understand how somebody sees it. And if I'm going to get criticized for that, then so be it.
And so be it. Now, a couple comments on what he said. Obviously, yeah, if you're a business, you have to do, you have to do business in maybe some unsavory areas, or you know, if you're, especially if you're international. However, you don't make it the one country that you ban it. You don't go out of your way to help that government. And this, of course, is a huge issue. And I've made this point before. If you're going to apply environment social governance, the idea of everything must be woke and virtue signaling and all up on whether it's race or transgender or climate or energy or social values or worker productivity or healthcare, but you don't apply it to the countries that you're begging for energy, places like Venezuela, places like OPEC nations in the Middle East, China, where this whole green revolution is going to be dependent upon. And that's where Apple, he's given a philosophy there. But what he says, when he's talking about China coming out of poverty, an interesting thing there, China is not some communist, socialist, you know, anti-market place necessarily. What they are is a technocracy, 21st century fascism. It's a version of fascism. Government control, government monitoring, no free speech, social credit system to keep you as a citizen. Your rights are dependent upon your, how would you word this, upon your loyalty and commitment to the Communist Party of China. And so it's not like he's sort of saying it as though people thought, well, wow, you couldn't say that about the Soviet Union or the Eastern Bloc. So China must not be all bad because they're bringing their people out of poverty. They're bringing their people out of poverty because first of all, it's a huge nation and it's almost impossible to regulate. So you have a lot of that, but it's also just the manufacturing base of the entire world at this point, you know, and also add India and South Korea and a few other Asian countries. But so when you're that kind of manufacturing base, you're booming and you're no government can suppress that. However, you know, it's not like there's a thriving, middle class necessarily, but they've lifted out of poverty. They're what's known as not a developing nation anymore, but an emerging nation. And of course they're exempt from things like climate reparations. But what's interesting about this Apple CEO is he follows a long line of people who have praised China. And I'll get to that in a minute. I'm going to have to take a break. But I wanted to play you this clip. So what happens is after this comes to light that they're suppressing the AirDrop function, which is a way for people to communicate without government monitoring, without networks, no way censors can stop it, no way the government can block it. Government of China is helpless to stop these protesters from communicating. But Apple's not, because if they're using an Apple cell phone, they can shut them down. We saw the same thing happen when Russia invaded Ukraine, how even electric cars, they were urging to shut them off in Russia. The bank card stopped working, Apple Pay, Google Pay. It just goes to show you, all you who rely on that, and I'm guilty as anyone. I got my Gmail and I got my Android phone and I got my WordPress blog and I got my MailChimp send out and I got the Verizon text. We could be shut down at a moment's notice when corporate government collusion happens. And we saw it, of course, with the Canadian truckers and Justin Trudeau. Okay, I was going to play you one more clip. This is Apple CEO Tim Cook going to the White House this week for a state dinner for Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, who I briefly met and shook hands with in 2018 and told him that Donald Trump was right on climate. And he gave me a double take. It's on my Climate Depot website if you want to see that video. But I got a chance to briefly meet Macron. But anyway, he had Apple Tim Cook, one of course, the invited dignitaries of the White House event. So a Fox News reporter, whose name I don't have, unfortunately, tracked down him heading to the White House, Apple CEO Tim Cook, and tried to grill him with questions about why Apple is aiding and abetting the communist government of China's efforts to crush protesters by not letting them communicate and by disabling the only country in the world. Here is Apple CEO Tim Cook. You actually won't hear him, but you'll hear the reporter. They're walking through a hall, and he is just avoiding her and fleeing from her. So play clip two, please.
The Chinese people's right to protest. Do you have any reaction to the factory workers that were beaten and detained for protesting COVID lockdowns? Do you regret restricting AirDrop access that protesters used to evade surveillance from the Chinese government? Do you think it's problematic to do business with the Communist Chinese Party when they suppress human rights?
Well, there you have it. That was Apple CEO Tim Cook and his extensive commentary on his defending his actions on China. And what did you hear from Apple CEO Tim Cook in response to the Fox News reporter's questions? Buckus, not a word, silence. This is what happened. This needs to be congressional hearings. This needs to be, in effect, it was Liz Wheeler, who I've been on her old show many times, and she actually participated in Climate Hustle too. She actually said if Apple and Google start pulling, for instance, Twitter off of the App Store because of it's allowing free speech, the horror that we should, Elon Musk, I mean, he's building spaceships, he's built the Tesla, he's rebuilding Twitter. Why not build the Musk a smartphone that has privacy and doesn't and allows free speech and tries to break up the big tech monopoly? Anyway, Elon Musk liked that idea. But we're fast approaching that day where, you know, I use a MacBook. I mean, and this is the CEO of the company. I mean, it's an incredible thing, and they can't even defend it. There's been no defense of this at all whatsoever. I mean, this is, you know, the corporate, you heard the defense. They're not responding. Apple has no official comment on this. All right, we will be right back after this. We're going to continue on this China theme, and then I, of course, I have a whole Hollywood update later, and then I have a whole climate update. But this is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We'll be right back after these things.
You should hear what Lynn Shaw is talking about.
Children today are the currency. They're eyeballs online for marketers. They're information. Today, children are the product, and they're being attacked on every front. Although there are a lot of organizations, nonprofits, a lot of good people, and in the government, and we're working so hard on laws and legislation, in the meantime, you cannot sit back. It's 2022, almost 2023. You have to step up. You have to protect your vulnerable children and grandchildren, and you all have to participate. The days of doing nothing, dropping the kids at school or on the school bus, and then that's it for 6 or 8 hours, over. Over, because we have a complicit, I dare say, I'll go for it, government, definitely complicit media, complicit Hollywood, and our schools and medical community seem to be riding this wave of child exploitation. They want a lot of gender talk, but they do not want to talk about internet safety, something that is surrounding all of us because we all live now in this digital world, and that's okay, but let's leverage it for good.
Lynn Shaw and Lynn's Warriors on TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
From climate change to foreign policy, and from economics to censorship, this is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We're doing some Apple bashing, which needs to be done. Okay, before I get into the other leaders and where this whole China admiration comes from, by Apple's praising China and saying their values align on things like climate, let's go back to 2014. I have this in my archives at Climate Depot. Apple CEO, he's still the CEO 8 years ago, Tim Cook tells investors who care more about return on investment, i.e. profits, than climate change, quote, "Your money is no longer welcome." That was Tim Cook's message back in 2014. This is when Apple was becoming increasingly woke and focused on climate change, virtue signaling. As board member Al Gore chairs the tech giant's dedication to environmental activism, investors left to wonder just how much shareholder value is being destroyed in an effort to combat climate change. Free market activists present shareholder resolution to computer giant Apple calling for consumer transparency on environmental issues. Mr. Cook made it clear to me that if I or any other investor was more concerned with return on investment than reducing carbon dioxide emissions, my investment was no longer welcome at Apple, said Justin Danhoff, the director of the National Center's Free Enterprise Project. So these are conservative groups that become Apple shareholders, and they go in and they go in and try to, you know, influence the company and make their political points and try to get attention drawn to some of these insane policies. And that's Apple's response, is that we will, you know, we are no longer interested. And this was these were the earlier days of environmental social governance. The idea is, if you own a business, who cares about profits? Who cares about return on investment? All we care about is your business. Is your business furthering the advance of the woke ideology and the progressive cause? If not, your business has no value and you can take your money and shove it. That's basically the message. So Apple has a long history of that. So here's what I wanted to do. And this is important because this is in my book, The Great Reset. It's also, I've reported on this for years and I've been fascinated by this. When Apple CEO Tim Cook said that China aligns completely with Apple's values, that the CCP is fixated on doing the right things to avert climate change, and because of their astounding economic growth in China at the expense of the American industrial base, based on our horrendous, you know, free trade policies, the number of people that have been pulled out of poverty, he said that China deserves praise. They've done an incredible job, far and beyond what any other country is doing. And we should applaud that of China. So on that note, I wanted to just go back. I think it was last week, I played the clip of Klaus Schwab declaring on Chinese state TV, China is a model for many nations. He did say it shouldn't be imposed on nations, but he sort of praised it. And let's go through the litany here. This is my list, just a very small sampling. 2009, New York Times, Tom Friedman, the columnist, lauded China's eco policies. One party can just impose politically difficult but critically important policies needed to move a society forward. And he goes on and says that China is led by a reasonably enlightened group of people, as China is today. It can also have great advantages. One party autocracy can have great advantages. That party can impose the politically difficult but critically important policies needed to move a society forward in the 21st century. That's frightening as bleep. Tom Friedman, this is on the pages of the New York Times. This wasn't in some blog or some off-the-cuff comment that he didn't think out in a radio interview somewhere. This was on the pages of the New York Times calling China's, quote, one-party autocracy being led by, quote, reasonably enlightened group of people in China, that they can impose politically difficult, critically important policies. So in other words, it's the benevolent dictatorship. And they're praising this. Okay. Then you have UN climate chief Cristina Figueres, who sought a centralized transformation globally that is going to make life on planet Earth very different. She goes on and she praised China for doing it right on climate. And she was another one of these, again, admiration for China. 2015, Obama Energy Secretary Stephen Chu praised China's one-party rule for, quote, looking out what's best for their country, unquote. He praised the ability to take unilateral action on China, quote, China doesn't have open elections, we do. That makes a big difference for a number of reasons. Quote, it's different in China because their government has to, in the end, look out for what's best for their country, for their entire people, not a particular industry, unquote. That's what Energy Secretary Stephen Chu had said way back in, this was 2015. So they had this lust for China, again, that China is, they're noble. These are enlightened people. They do what's best. They don't, the messiness of democracy and, oh, these idiots, they can get fooled by someone like Donald Trump and we can pull out of the UN Paris Agreement. We can never let that happen again. Ergo, what's going on with Twitter working with the federal government and Democrats and the Biden campaign? Okay. 2013, Justin Trudeau praised China. there's a level of admiration I actually have for China, because their basic dictatorship is allowing them to turn their economy around on a dime and say, we need to go green. We need to start investing in solar. There's a flexibility that I know that a former Prime Minister Stephen Harper in Canada must have dreamed about, having a dictatorship where you can do whatever you want. That I find quite interesting, unquote. Justin Trudeau, and I'm going to repeat the key part to this quote. There's a level of admiration I actually have for China, because their basic dictatorship is allowing them to turn their economy around on a dime and go green. That is what, that's all you need to know about what happened with the Canadian convoy of truckers there. So there's many other quotes of people, of Western leaders, progressives, liberals, establishment figures, just praising it. They want that police, that one party authoritarian rule, or in the words of Thomas Friedman, the one party autocracy. And here's the kicker. And this is the premise of my book, The Great Reset. They got it. In March of 2020, the whole world changed because of the emergency powers under COVID, and because of the fear factor, and because of a compliant public, both in the United States and internationally. You had the once free West transform into the Chinese one party autocracy. And what was that one party? It was the public health party. It was the COVID lockdown party. And that's what happened. Governors, mayors, overnight had dictatorial powers, closing schools, closing churches, closing business, issuing stay-at-home orders, curfews, shutting, you know, they were talking at one point about shutting down borders, issuing mask mandates, issuing vaccine mandates, of course, allowing Walmart to be open and abortion clinics to be open. And you know, those were the essential places, but hey, small moms, they had to close. All the non-big corporate chains had to shut down because, you know, that's where most of the dissent happened. Anyway, corporate world, we can control. Every corporate board in the world quakes in fear at the woke progressive activists. And these same activists used to rail on big business for decades, but now they control big business. So they love it. And you don't hear that anymore about how evil multinational corporations are, because they're all virtue signaling in the direction that the woke activists want. So that's what's happened. All these leaders and all these impulses that praise China, they got what they wanted. And that's why they don't want to give up the COVID lockdowns. They don't want to give up the world of this COVID emergency. In fact, they had the vote. I talked about this a week or two ago. It won by one vote in the Senate, actually, to repeal the COVID emergency. Chuck Schumer accidentally voted to repeal it. He meant to keep it. Of course, Biden has said he will veto it, which would require two-thirds to override. So the COVID emergency powers are not going anytime soon. And don't even think of it as just Biden, but think of it in terms of mayors, governors, all the money it brings in, all the powers that they have. Right now in LA County, in California, they're the return of the mask mandate. Yay! That's gonna be good. We're gonna be so safe. I can't wait to see all the COVID case numbers. My favorite was the University of California epidemiologist who said tying mask mandates to COVID case counts, which are completely arbitrary and not even accurate in many cases, and depending on how many tests you do and asymptomatic people, it's just absurd, is like tying masking to COVID case counts is like tying it to phases of the moon. In other words, there's no science behind it. It's complete hokum. It's complete, what would you call it? Tarot cards, basically, is what they're engaging in. But hey, LA County, I don't know why California doesn't have a complete and total lockdown like China does in places like Beijing, because I'll tell you what, LA County and the state of California, not only would they probably comply, they would vote those politicians in with wider margins the more they got locked down. I really think it's like a Stockholm syndrome in California. Doesn't matter what they do, Gavin Newsom could shut the state down, tell everyone they can't do any, well, he was out flaunting and breaking every rule. And you know what? His margin of election would increase next time. And by the way, you'll hear it here first. The next Democrat nominee will be Gavin Newsom, and the next U.S. president will most likely be Gavin Newsom. Now, it's Saturday, December 3rd, 2022. Mark that prediction down. Gavin Newsom will be elected president in 2024. America is ready for Gavin Newsom. That's what I think. Republicans deserve to lose. People, you know, who they have not changed the COVID election laws, the mass mail-in, same day voting, no verification in so many different places. They deserve to lose, and they probably will lose. So that's my prediction, and probably angering people by saying that. But anyway, all right. So that was it. So the Chinese one party rule. When we get back here, I'm going to go into some update on Hollywood. I got some fun stuff. A whole host of Hollywood and climate activities have happened. But we will be, this is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We will be right back after these messages.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I was on the Brian McClain Show today, which I absolutely love doing. I love being on TNT anytime I'm on. And of course, I heard the Maltzberg Minute, which is much more professional than when I do. He's better looking than me. He's got better hair than me. I have to keep striving to keep up with him and Morano. I mean, you know, I've got hair envy over here. And you know what they say when you're going bald, hair today, gone tomorrow. Actually, lack of hair today. Okay, so I've wasted about half a minute of your time. What is going on? We are watching this pattern get set here, all right? Quite frankly, for you folks in the United States, the pattern down the road from about, December 12th through December 30th looks a heck of a lot like it did in the famed Snowmageddon back in February 2010. Also a pattern late in January 1966 that looked like that. What does this mean? Well, it means that for the United States and Europe, it sent lawyers, guns, and money because there's a heck of a lot of cold and a lot of snow on the way. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog, meteorologist Joe Bastardi, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
As my parents have grown older, driving has become more challenging. Intersections feel busier, driving in peak hour traffic and travelling longer distances is stressful, and driving at night or in bad weather is risky. Even small mistakes can be costly. Look for the signs. If you notice driving is getting harder for loved ones, talk about the alternatives. Help them make a plan to stop driving on their terms. Don't let your parents stop driving by accident. Think Road Safety, a message from the Government of South Australia.
Challenging the consensus. This is the Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Right before the break, I was talking about... we were still talking about the Apple CEO and the praise of China by all these Western leaders and how COVID lockdowns and emergency powers gave the once free West Chinese one-party rule. Well, one more clip I wanted to play was of BlackRock CEO Larry Fink explaining why the future just might be one-party authoritarian rule in so-called market economies. Let's listen.
Uncertainty. Markets don't like uncertainty. Markets like actually totalitarian governments where you have a understanding of what's out there. And obviously we're the whole dimension is changing now with, as you said, a democratization of countries. And democracies are very messy, as we know in the United States. You have opinions changing.
There it is. And I can't say it any better than Larry Fink has said it here. BlackRock CEO, architect of environmental social governance, which has never applied to China, never applied to the Middle East. Hey, it's only applied to Western countries to make us woke and to beat us into submission and to literally impose an agenda that they could never get through the electorate upon us. But let's get the heart of what Larry Fink, BlackRock CEO, has said. This is on Bloomberg TV, by the way. Markets don't like uncertainty. Markets like totalitarian governments. And what's democracy? It's messy. And they don't like messiness. They like that regulatory certainty. And who provides, who probably provides the most regulatory certainty in the world? China! Hey, that's great! Apple should triple their investment following Larry Fink's advice in China. This is fantastic. In the United States, if we want growing markets, which sounds like a great thing, and our investments to grow, we need totalitarian government. That's what markets like. We should follow what the markets like. You see how perverse this world is? I no longer say I like capitalism because capitalism, people say, you're a capitalist? You know, it depends on what you mean. They call Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, a capitalist. He's not. They call Bill Gates, the monopolist, a capitalist. He's not. They'll call Larry Fink a capitalist. He's not. They'll call big tech private companies. They're not. So be careful of your definitions. We live in an insane world right now. Absolutely insane. And by the way, I love bashing Republicans. The House leadership, from Mitch McConnell to Kevin McCarthy, even if they had won overwhelmingly in the midterms, you really were excited about that load of bleep that would be in charge in Washington? I didn't lose any sleep over it. In fact, well, I've already told you on the show, I didn't vote. I actually was intending to vote, but was unable to because of personal death in my family. So anyway, but I don't regret not voting. And now I might make that a future plan not to vote. Anyway, or vote, just throwaway vote. That's what I've always traditionally done in presidential elections, voting for Howard Phillips for president, the U.S. Taxpayer Party, or Pat Buchanan, or write-ins years ago. But anyway, okay, I digress. So you see what Larry Fink, BlackRock CEO, markets don't like uncertainty, markets like totalitarian governments, and democracies are messy. All right, enough of all that depressing stuff. Let's try to have a little fun here. Back into the world of climate. This week was an amazing just cascade of Hollywood involvement right now in the climate debate, led by Disney star, actress, singer Bette Midler, went on an epic climate rant. And it was all writing. I wish I could play you the audio of this, but there was no audio. She was asked, someone made fun of her by basically calling her a Hollywood climate hypocrite, saying, Bette Midler is so worried about climate that she abandoned her house, stopped flying, gave up all modern conveniences, and now lives in a solar-powered hut in the forest. What a great example Bette Midler set for the rest of us. Three cheers for Bette. So Bette Midler, and I don't even know who this guy was. I think it was just some critic. It wasn't any major figure with a lot of followers. Bette Midler replied on Twitter this week, a couple days ago, if you knew what I'd done to mitigate the criminal environmental craziness in this country, you would bleep my bleep. I've done my part and I've done your part. I've done geothermal, solar, hybrid electric cars, composting, recycling. I bathe once a month. F you, except she spelled out the words F you. So this was very funny. This is Bette Midler. First of all, I want to go through and break this down, but she literally is holier than thou. She's not. I love where she says, I've done my part and I've done your part. So she's doing the part of several people or more than one person. She says, in addition, I've saved parks, built parks, cleaned parks, sent kids to school, taught them to play music, honored nature by giving people actual land to grow their own food, find peace and serenity. What have you done besides slag me? Now, her second comments, I support all of that, save parks, build parks. But let's go back to her first part, where she says, I've done my part and your part. I've done geothermal. That's fine. If you want to do geothermal, it's actually a very green way to go. It's not, that's a fascinating energy source. In fact, George W. Bush used that in his house in Texas. Well, Al Gore was using, I think, 30 times the average electricity of the average American. No one paid attention to that. Solar. Okay. So she's done solar, which means she has very hard to recycle solar panels bought from China, empowering China, violating all standards of ESG, producing virtually no energy that's usable, especially for an industrial economy. So that's meaningless. She did hybrid electric car. So I guess she didn't have a full electric, but either way, expensive battery, half of a million pounds of rare earth mining and materials just in general go into an electric car. Again, more reliance on China, powered by an electric grid, powered by fossil fuels. And again, recycling problems and giving the government all sorts of power and absolutely not environmentally friendly, not practical. So she doesn't get any points for that. Composting, good for her. She's out composting a yard. Recycling, well, there's an interesting one. Plastic recycling is turning out to be a hoax by all major standards in mainstream media now. It's not actually getting, certain things are not getting recycled. And here's my favorite, I bathe once a month. Now, interesting thing about this, there is a lot of science behind not bathing necessarily daily or, taking the natural oils and resins, but once a month is extreme. I interviewed Kevin Anderson at a UN climate summit. He's from the Tyndale Center, climate activist, and he said we need to stop normalizing showering and bathing every day. And again, that's a personal choice, but bathing once a month sounds like a problem. And actually not bathe, and only bathing once a month because you think you're somehow saving the planet is psychologically off to me. When Al Gore did his rallies in Washington, D.C., it was some kind of covered by NBC News. This was back in like 2008, 2009, and it was like his climate rally. They urged people to take, you know, baths together because of the save the water, save the planet. But this just gets kind of wacky. So that's Bette Midler's take on all of this. Now, the other one, Barbara Streisand, came out this week. She did a fundraising letter for Al Gore's Climate Reality Project. And she said, quote, "The climate crisis isn't a future problem. It's already here. We are living with climate catastrophe." This is so Barbara Streisand, by the way, in my first book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, I credit her with one of the earliest uses of the word climate emergency. And this was way back 2003 now off the top of my head. So that word has not been in common usage until recently. But I give Barbara Streisand credit. She was one of the original arbiters of the climate emergency. Of course, now she's saying we live in a climate catastrophe. I think she wants to vary her words. Now, what is Barbara Streisand's history? Now, first of all, a couple fascinating things about Barbara Streisand. It was 2005 that she used the phrase climate emergency. She has funded to the tune of $250,000, and actually much higher from what I remember. She says she spent countless millions on this. A UN IPCC scientist named Michael Oppenheimer. Now, I've interviewed Oppenheimer about this. Yeah, he's a guy who says, oh, these other scientists are funded by big oil and the energy industry, and he's taking money from big Hollywood. Barbara Streisand had funded, I think it was through the National Resources Defense Council, or I don't want to get that one wrong. Let's see here. Environmental Defense Fund. Sorry. It was the EDF, Environmental Defense Fund. She gave the IPCC lead author at least $250,000. She says she gave millions to others of environment. She says her quote is, "I donated $250,000 to support the work of Michael Feiner, and since then I and others have spent countless millions." Okay, so at least $250,000 to this UN author who's taking Barbara Streisand money when he's working at the Environmental Defense Fund, environmental group. And then he, on a Tom Brokaw special, Michael Oppenheimer, the man receiving $250,000, was basically dissing other scientists, saying, skeptical scientists saying, oh, they must be industry funded. Don't pay attention to them. And he's funded by big Hollywood. It reminds me of when I worked for Inhofe. James Hansen was always accusing scientists of taking money, but he took $250,000, I believe, from the Heinz Foundation. I know it was from the Heinz Foundation, but I believe it was $250,000. It may have actually gone up because he got several different awards from them. The Heinz Foundation was joined by John Kerry and Theresa Kerry. Well, they were involved in what? Making of ketchup, Heinz ketchup. So I remember Senator Inhofe brilliantly went to the Senate floor and railed against what he saw as people talk about big energy funding. Why don't they talk about big ketchup money? He's being funded by big ketchup, because this is the same concept. Everyone has biases. And by the way, it's a whole separate issue. There is no energy funding of these skeptical scientists. That is a myth. It goes back decades of myth. The Union of Concerned Scientists, the harshest critics of climate skeptical scientists, said that $15 to $19 million over two decades or a decade and a half had gone to groups skeptical of climate change. This was reported by NBC News and Thompson as breaking news. One United States Department of Agriculture grant to study how farm odors contribute to global warming exceeded all the money that ExxonMobil was ever accused of giving to skeptical groups. So it's a red herring. And then you have groups like the natural gas industry giving the Sierra Club, Sierra Club, almost $29 million, and they kept it secret. It was finally broken out in the New York Times. Then you have ExxonMobil giving $100 million to Stanford University to set up their global warming research. So if anything, the big energy companies have given to make themselves appear green. But anyway, back to Barbara Streisand, who funds UN scientists. The funny thing about Barbara Streisand here is, back in, I believe this is 2000 and, well, let me see. I think it's 2000 and like 2000, it was about 10 years ago, maybe not even that years ago. But anyway, she, 2019 actually, wasn't that long ago, 3 years ago, Barbara Streisand flew her three cloned dogs 10,000 miles to watch her sing in London, despite her past warnings of a climate emergency. She took her three Coton de Tulier pooches, Miss Scarlet, Miss Violet, and Fanny, 10,000-mile round-trip flight to watch her perform at the London's British Summertime Concert in 2019. The environmental footprint was massive, and this is after calling for that. So Barbara Streisand, back at it, no sense of shame. Hollywood star Ed Norton, this is a Hollywood actor, Ed Norton, hits out at the non-sustainable luxury tourism, urges certified standards of sustainability in tourism to put the brakes on global warming. Now, certified standards of sustainability in tourism, this is like basically where you can't engage in tourism or run a business unless your company meets these stringent standards of whatever sustainability, whatever they're claiming that is. Now, what is that going to immediately do? Create shortages. Gas-powered car bans, create shortages. Bans on high-yield nitrogen fertilizer, create food shortages. Shutting down animal agriculture, create meat shortages. So the Hollywood actor Ed Norton urging certified standards of sustainability in tourism will make tourism more expensive, meaning less people. Which, hey, isn't that what Hollywood's all about? Here's the interesting thing he said. He lamented, actor Ed Norton lamented, the number of people who get on planes. This is a quote, quote, the number of people get on planes, quote, we have to get a planet that can sustain our life. And if the industry doesn't play a role, given the number of people who get on planes, it's not going to happen, unquote. So you get a little sense there that they don't think that the commoners or the masses or the unwashed masses should be allowed to just fly willy-nilly. Well, guess what? The phrase climate emergency brings with it, if you declare a climate emergency, you can't fly unless it's, quote, morally justifiable. And all these restrictions do not apply to private jets. That's the fascinating thing. And that brings us to the Bill Maher quote, which is going to be fun. Bill Maher, Hollywood, you know, who is the show on HBO, tells teens talking about climate to shut the bleep up. And he used the F word. You're using cars as much as we did. Bill Maher praises private jets. The only people who don't like private jets are the ones who can't fly them. In other words, you can't afford it. I've never been on a private jet in my life. I couldn't even imagine the opportunity in my life to ever go on a private jet. I mean, I don't even understand that. But comedian Bill Maher did this in an interview, and he was in an interview with Dana Carvey. And he said, Greta Thunberg is one of the few exceptions of the youth climate activists who refused to fly private in order to help. And he went on, he praised Greta Thunberg as not representative of her, he praised her for action, but he says she's not representative of her generation because she's actually walking the walk. She refused to fly over to Europe. Of course, she flew in that carbon-based fiber made of fossil fuels thing, and the crew flew to help her and then flew back. So the whole thing was a ridiculous show. But anyway, he's wrong about her. But and here's my favorite line of what he said. As long as we've decided – well, let me finish. He goes, you know what? We've all decided we're just going to drive over the Grand Canyon and have a great time on our way. These young people, they're still driving. I don't see them out there on Greta with a sailboat. Their young people are using cars as much as me did. So shut the F up. And then Bill Maher says, as long as that's what we've decided, I'm not going to be the schmuck driving a three foot car. And what he's referring to there, the little zip car, the electric car, the little commuter cars that people want to have available on an app that you can drive around. Fascinating stuff, because Bill Maher, right, once again, I think we can almost completely agree with him. I wanted to play this clip if we have time. I think it's about a minute. I don't know. Well, I don't know if I have time. All right, let's go ahead and play. This is the clip number four. It's Yellowstone clip. It's another Hollywood reference. This is Kevin Costner in the film Yellowstone playing John Dutton, ripping one of his colleagues. I think we deleted the F word out of this. Ripping one of his colleagues for supporting solar panels over fossil fuels. Listen to this.
Let's see, what other policies I'm proposing? Suspend natural gas leases on state land in Powder River County to support the sage grouse restoration project.
There's been a precipitous drop in sage-grouse numbers, and there's empirical evidence that gas exploration and extraction have a negative impact on the sage-grouse environment.
And what effect do you think 7,000 acres of solar panels are going to have on their environment?
There's no evidence that solar panels would have any impact on the sage-grouse environment.
Okay, that was the clip. It was a fantastic clip, basically saying solar is just as destructive to the environment as any natural gas. That is all part of it. Hollywood, fascinating stuff this week in Hollywood. Anyway, this has been the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with commentary you won't hear anywhere else, because I just don't care. I'm not a partisan. I'm not pro-Republican, as I think you'll find out. Anyway, thank you for listening, and see you next week.